Thank you for tuning in to the Given Rugby podcast. If this is your first time here, welcome. If this isn't your first time, then you know there are some people that we have to thank. First on the list, the Cover Podcast Network. They provide all of the production, all of the video, all of the editing that you see on YouTube, and all of the great audio that you hear on your preferred podcast app. We're also proudly brought to you by CardTrader.com. CardTrader is Australia's only online marketplace where you can buy and sell trading card games like Pokemon, Magic the Gathering, and also sports cards, NBA cards, NRL cards, AFL cards, NFL cards. They're all available at CardTrader.com. That's CardTrader.com. And if you sign up today, you will lock in a 3% sales commission. That means for the lifetime of your membership, of the time that you're signed up to Card Trader, you'll only pay a 3% sales commission on any card that you sell. Most other auction houses, most other platforms, marketplaces, some of the big ones, you're paying upwards of 12, 13, 14, 15, even as much as 20%. So sign up now. And finally, we are also brought to you by ASICS. Hit the link down below to buy anything you need, all things rugby, boots, apparel, sportswear, golf, they have it. Make sure you use our link because we get a nice little commission and that funds all of the stuff we like to do here. Okay, without further ado, on to the next guest.
Sorry. I forgot two really important things. To help the podcast grow, we really need your help. You can do this by following our social media channels. We're at Given Rugby on your preferred social media channel. We need subscribes to our YouTube channel. Again, we are at Given Rugby on YouTube. And finally, and probably most importantly, we need positive reviews on your preferred podcasting platform. The more positive reviews we get, the more the show will get recommended to other people around the world who like rugby. Don't forget to join the Give 'em Rugby Club. You can do that at giveemrugby.com. It only costs $5 a month and it will give you access to a whole bunch of exclusive content, access to our guests, discounted merch, all that kind of thing. So please make sure you do that because that will ultimately fund this show long term and help us build out a bigger, better, broader production, more guests, better sound and all those kinds of things. So please make sure you join the Give 'em Rugby Club. Okay, take two, I promise. Now we're on to the next guest. Look, in my line, I get ready. Feeling too trippy, get it cracking like a levy. I'ma show them all how to party with the levy. Keep the countdown and release the confetti. The party don't start till I get there. I set a soul and the rest and it ain't fair. I've been waiting on this moment my whole life. Yeah, give me my crown. Welcome back to the Given Rugby podcast. Today, I'm sitting down with one of my favorite players of all time. I do say that about everyone who comes on the show. So, but today, I do mean it. He is the Brumbies captain. He's also captain of Australia A. He is Ryan Lonergan. How are you, mate?
Very good, thank you, mate. How are you going?
I'm glad I got your first name right. I almost called you Lockie. So.
Yeah. A lot of people do, even though we look nothing alike.
Yeah, and like different positions too. You know, he's pretty squat and stocky, and you're a little bit taller and leaner.
Well, he's shaved his hair off now, so he might look a little bit more like me, but I still can't see anything.
You probably got a better pass, though.
Yeah, a little bit. He does pride himself on his passing when we get turnovers in the lineout, and he's usually at halfback.
Yep.
He's been sending a few pills, and he's been letting me know about it, though.
How's your lineout throw, then?
Back Hansen and I, during NRC way back, we used to pre-training, our warm-up was throw lineouts, and we actually got pretty good at it. But it's one of those things, you know, like a prop will sit there and try kick goals, and when it's like you're stuffing around, it's not too bad. But once the pressure's on,
I had to
throw lineouts for an under-18s game once. I can't remember what happened, if we got a card or something. It was all front ball.
two. Yeah. That's funny. It is interesting. Like, I was lucky enough in one of my jobs, I actually had an office that overlooked the Brumbies training field.
Oh yeah.
So I would see a lot of the guys. You know, certain guys would come out early and warm up and do kicking, do line out throwing, and that kind of stuff. It's really interesting. You know, rugby, there's obviously your footy skills, but every position has sort of one or two technical skills that are, you know, specific to that position. You know, halfback, you've got to have a really excellent pass. You know, your chat's got to be really good. Props, you know, obviously is a very technical scrummaging aspect and lifting in the line outs, you know, hookers throwing. So I always really like to sit there and see who was out there putting in the extra hours. You know, I would, you know, Mac, I would see him all the time doing his kicking, doing the high ball, doing goal kicking. And then, you know, then, so for me sitting there, and I would see you out there a lot as well doing goal kicking. So for me, you know, especially when you two were quite early in your career, I think maybe 2020, there you might have had a goal, you might have kicked a goal to win a game, and he might have kicked a goal to win the game, or there was some.
Yeah.
There were,
yep.
But from my perspective, like, it was really awesome because I'd seen both of you take that kick in training, you know, 50 times. So then, as you say, when the lights were on, you're like, yeah, I've done this before.
Yeah.
It's obviously not as simple as that, but, you know, the idea that you can repeat that skill over and over again and you kind of feel comfortable kicking it, you know, the stakes are a little bit higher, but, you know, is that something you do? You kind of go into yourself and you go, I've done this before.
Yeah, 100%. I think the more you practice, the more you forget about the occasion when the time comes and you kind of just go and do it. I've got a weird thing of I try not to sort of think about the outcome of the, like, if I get it or if I miss or whatever I'm doing until it's done. And then I feel like I'm not caring. But then once I've done it, you know how much you care about it. I've missed a couple goals when I was younger and just devastated after it. But when I was kicking the goal, I just wasn't really thinking about it. You know, like I try not to put it in my head too much. And I think it's what you said. It's probably the training. Just sort of knowing your little routine that you use.
Mm. Yeah. And it's interesting, like I play a bit of golf and I had this guy.
Yeah.
No good. I'm terrible. But I had a good friend who is a really good golfer. He plays off plus six. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, he's really, really good. He earlier in life was going down a professional golfer's route, but it didn't quite pan out for him. But he's incredible. And his thing is you have to practice like it's the most important thing in the world and play like it's not. Because you sort of, for what you were saying, you know, you miss one or you miss a pass, you drop a ball, whatever, you have to be able to forget about it and move on and make the next involvement a good one. You know, golf is much the same because you have to take every shot on its merit. And if you get bogged down and frustrated because you've made one bad shot, you're going to have a bad hole. You might even have a bad 18. You might even have a bad month.
Mm.
So it's an interesting, like, I'd never really considered approaching training that way. So it was just fascinating.
Yeah, golf is I reckon golf is like the top of the mind games.
100%. For me.
Because I've always been able to do, if I made an error, I could like physically work harder during the next 5 minutes to try and make something better. So you drop a ball and you try and make up for it by doing something, working a little bit harder. But golf, it's like the harder you try, the worse you get. That's why I don't play a lot of golf.
But it is. It's such a simple game, right? It's stick, ball, you know, put it in a hole. That's really what it is. It's, you know, a couple hundred meters down the park. But so the concept is really simple, but the actual action, the playing, you know, all of the technical aspects, your swing and you know, putting, your short game, like, it's just so difficult to master.
Yeah.
And even, you know, I went through a period where I was playing like two or three times a week and the handicap was coming down and it was good, but I never had every single aspect of my game come together at once.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much.
Yeah. Like, so many elements to it.
Yeah. It's just, Just, yeah. it's such a frustrating game.
Do you still play a lot?
No, I got the two kids, yeah. You know, with work and some of the other stuff I'm interested in. And, you know, being a father is my primary focus now.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, not having kids, I kind of reflect on it now and I think, God, I had so much time on my hands, so much time that I probably, you know, maybe I wasted it, maybe I didn't.
But, yeah.
You know, like, yeah, you just, you know, when you're with them, especially, you know, my son is two, so he's just go. Like,
flat out.
You know, someone said to me the other day that, because, you know, they've got short attention spans, right? They play with one thing and then they move and they get you to do something else. And someone said to me the other day, like, you know that you're the toy. So, like, when I'm playing with him, they're like, you know you're the toy. I was like, yeah, that makes sense, right? That's why he's getting me to, you know, pick the stuff up off the shelf and hand it to him. That was just a really interesting insight.
Yeah.
Like, so the time he has with me, he's like, I'm going to play with you and I'm going to treat you like a toy.
Yeah.
What about you? You got kids on the horizon, mate?
No, I don't. I've got a niece.
Nice.
And I still go back to the farm, the family farm, on days off and stuff.
Yep.
And my older brother, Mitch, still lives at home on the farm. And Sienna is with him quite a lot of the time. So that's kind of been my little introduction.
Yeah,
to,
yeah, good.
I get the good bits. And then once she starts crying, I just
hand it back.
Yeah. But, yeah, she's awesome.
Mate, tell me a little bit about the farm, you know, growing up out there with, you know, obviously your brother's a professional footballer too. I know Mitch, he was a pretty handy footballer as well back in the day. You know, tell me a little bit about growing up out there. What was that like?
It was like unbelievable. Well, it still is. That's still why I go back there. Noss and I have got a place in Canberra and I probably should stay there full time and I just find myself back out on the farm. It's just so relaxing for me. Like, I really enjoy the peaceful side of it, and then being able to just constantly have little jobs to do. I like to keep pretty active, so I sort of tinker around a lot. I don't sort of have, my old man doesn't really give me specific jobs to do, but I've recently got a Kelpie and she loves doing sort of sheep work and stuff, so it's got me back into that. But it's just nice. I do a lot of sort of hunting around the farm, but I think I do use it more as like a meditation sort of. I get back there and you sort of relax, and like how much footy sort of takes over your life. I really enjoy it to get back there and just sort of switch off a little bit.
Because I think that's so important. You know, I reflect on my life and you know, my shortened footy career. I always played my best footy when I had an outlet.
Mm.
So, you know, whether it was work or it was, you know, some kind of meditative thing that I was doing, or, you know, I used to stretch yoga. I used to do yoga and Pilates. But, you know, I always found that having those other things, because it, you know, even not at the professional level, it can really sport, but footy in particular here in Canberra anyway, it can really consume your whole life. You know, all of a sudden you're in the gym three times a week, you're training twice a week. Then you're playing on a Saturday and you're getting there early to help set up, and you're volunteering, and so it can really consume you.
Yeah.
And I think it is really important to have that distance sometimes, just to get away from it, even if it's just for a couple of hours or a day or an afternoon, just to have that, like, I have this other thing that I can go to.
Yeah, it's important to. It also helps you go through the low times as well. Like, if you have a bad game, you know that, like, I know that I can then get back to the farm and farm's still there. You know, the farm doesn't care if I played bad or if I went good. So it sort of keeps you pretty grounded as well.
Yep.
And it just gives you something else to be able to focus on. Because like you said, it can just take over your life. And you do play better when you're, I think it's when you sort of act like you don't care as much, because when you care about it too much, you get too invested, and then you start over-stressing about things. That's for me personally anyway. Mm. Some people might be the other way around, but it's been so good for me to be able to use that as my outlet. It's like the boys, I find interesting the boys that travel for rugby because I've never had to do it. So I've never really had to experience what it's like to sort of live away from your hometown. And I think that's why like there's a massive golf bug going around at Brums at the moment. And I think it's everyone's outlet. Like it's good. It's what they talk about.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great way for us to be able to sort of disconnect a little bit from footy.
Yeah, I think it's as I think it's really important. I think it's really important in your work life, family life. You know, for me, my escape now is my family.
Yeah.
But you know, there are definitely days where I'm like, geez,
I still need a podcast.
I need to talk to an adult.
I'm sick of being a toy.
Yeah. So, mate, yeah, I definitely agree. And it obviously must be really nice to, you know, you talk about the farm doesn't care about how you're playing and that kind of thing. But it must be nice, too, to go home to family as well.
Yeah.
And have that level of support and security and that safety net.
Yeah, I've always had, like, the most supporting family. Like, without them, I wouldn't, Noss and I and my older brother wouldn't be where we are today. You know, our parents we owe them everything, really. There's so much that we take for granted and took for granted when we were young. I was actually thinking about it yesterday when Mum used to have to drive us out really early hours of the morning to Brum's training and then she would hang around, do some shopping, do some gym,
yep,
and then pick us up, take us to school, and then we'd go to Vikings training in the afternoon. And then we just thought it was normal. We waiting for our snacks and get home.
Hurry up, Mum. Yeah, what's come for on. Dinner?
So, yeah, the older you get, the more you realise how much they do for you. Mm. And I try to repay it as much as I can.
But, you know, talk a bit about that. Like, you and your brother, you know, both sort of coming through school were pretty highly touted. You know, even when I was playing at Tuggeranong, at the Vikings, and I'm not sure how much older than you I am, but, you know, I remember hearing about the two of you. You know, you both were probably 15 or 16, but coming through the junior program, coming through the Brumbies Academy system and that kind of thing, that level of commitment is pretty incredible from such a young age. You know, what was it about the sport that made you want to go and do that at such a young age? Really, you know, hone in on footy as the thing you wanted to do.
I think our old man had a lot to do with it. He always loved rugby union, so I think that was the path we're going to go down. And then we really enjoyed just stuffing around in the backyard playing with the footy. And then for me personally, once I sort of got a little bit older, maybe in my teenage years, I was super competitive. So I just wanted to win everything. So yep. I think that's probably what got me until I went professional, really. And I'm still super competitive, but now I've found a little bit more of what I like about it, like the friendships and like the places you can go to and that kind of thing, the experiences you can get. But I'd say, yeah, like I enjoyed hanging out, like making great friends throughout school playing footy, but I think, like, I was so competitive. Like,
too competitive. My wife, who you just saw before, she says to me often that I have a competition problem. Mm. So if I can turn something into a competition, I will.
Mm.
And if I lose, I'm awful. Awful to be around.
Yeah. Well, it's a great way to get the best out of yourself. Yeah. If you just make a little competition, even if it's with yourself.
No, I think... Yeah, and I think having spoken to a few of you guys and having been around a lot of you guys as you were coming through, I think that's a common theme is that level of competitiveness that you guys have and it's also like an internal drive to kind of do it. You know, I wasn't the kind of player who would train on my own and do those kinds of things. I needed a structured environment around me to get the best out of me. But often when I look at the guys who have been successful, they have a level of competitiveness, but it's that internal motor to, you know, get up early and go to the gym and, you know, play in that extra tournament or that sevens tournament to get fit for the season and to do the extra rep or to work with the, you know, the outside backs group in conditioning to improve. Like, you know, it's those guys who tend to go on and do good things. And you know, I've seen plenty of guys who are really talented but just didn't quite have that level of competitiveness and drive. Yeah. And you probably see it a fair bit.
You see it all the time growing up, the guys that are the most talented and then they just fall off.
Mm.
And there's so many reasons that can happen. You know, like obviously upbringing and tough upbringings. Like I can't sit here and say that they wasted all that because they might have had so much going on off the field that I just never had to deal with because I had such a privileged upbringing, really. Mm. So, yeah, like whether it's their drive or if they had so many distractions that it sort of overcome the rugby side of things. But, yeah, it is like especially Vikings doing the junior stuff because there's not that sort of like you have to go out of your way to get to training. Like you're not at school where you just after school go train or whatever it is. There's sort of a bit more commitment there from the family and the player.
Yeah, and I think that's something worth explaining a little bit. Like in Canberra, we don't have, you know, if you look at Sydney, Brisbane, I'm not sure about Melbourne, but definitely in Perth as well, that there's a schools competition and there's multiple schools competitions. In Canberra, the clubs and the schools kind of play together.
Yeah.
So the schools, you know, they have often really well resourced. You know, anyone listening to this podcast probably will have heard of St. Eddie's, probably will have heard of Marist College. You know, Canberra Grammar's got a really good program now. But, you know, the facilities are excellent. They've got gyms and, you know, excellent fields. And, you know, that's part of where the school fees go. You know what, you know, as you say, the club setup, you know, I assume you guys were just training over at Garran.
At Gary.
At Gary, sorry. Yeah. Garran. Yeah. Yeah.
Gary Fields.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So good.
Try it, getting your gear out of the shipping containers. Yeah. And yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so, you know, I think, you know, that's a really good point you raise. Like, you're getting exposed to that. You know, it's something you have to want to do. It's not something that's sort of handed. Not handed's not the right word, but you're not in an environment where it's readily available to you, so you have to go and seek it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to ask you, too, you touched on something just before about, you know, the friendships that you've made and the opportunities that rugby provides, the places you can go. I think that's something that's super unique to rugby. There's not many sports, and I'm a good example of this. I sort of hopped around different places around the world and played a season here and there. I'm still in contact with most of the blokes I played with. And you know, when the club had women's teams too, you know, met lots of really awesome women doing good things in sport and in careers and off the field and stuff. So I'm in contact with most of those people. You know, Kat and I, when we were doing our wedding list, you know, I started writing out, you know, all these guys are in Scotland and I got to invite them, and these guys are in New Zealand, these guys are in the UK, this guy's in France. Like, you know, so that, like, it was just, it was fun reflecting on that, you know. But, you know, I think for you too, as someone who's sort of now, you know, you've come through that Australian junior setup, you've come through into Super Rugby, and now you're sort of getting exposed to at that Wallaby level. You must have some. It must just be awesome walking through the hotel door or the first day of a camp or whatever, and you just see all the boys you haven't seen for a year or so, and actually, you know, you're on their team now. You're not just seeing them on the other side of the field.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like the best example of sort of being able to meet new people was the Barbars trip that we recently did.
Yep.
End of last year, because there was I think there was about 15 Aussies, maybe a few more, and then about 8 or 9 Japanese guys.
Yep.
And it was just the greatest trip ever. I'm gonna have good mates for that forever. Like you said, now around all the Super Rugby clubs in Australia, like I can say that I've got good mates in all those teams. After the games, you're always sort of catching up with them. So yeah, it's great. And I'm confident that wherever you go and play rugby in the world that you have the same experience, just because there's so many good people in the game.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's what I've come to love over the last couple of years. At the start, it was sort of more the competitiveness that drove me to continue to play, and now it's more like the people and the experience you can get from just cruising around and meeting awesome people.
Yeah, I mean, my experience was, you know, I would land somewhere with – not really knowing anyone other than, you know, maybe the coach or the the president of the club who I'd spoken to on the phone. And instantly, you know, you go to the first training session or whatever, and instantly you've got a support network. Mm. You got, you know, you got all these blokes on your team who get around you because you're like a new toy, you know.
Yeah.
This bloke going to be any good? So then, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of like, you know, who's this guy?
Yeah.
But, you know, after a while, after a couple of weeks, you start to, you know, earn a level of respect.
Yeah.
And then on, you know, on outside of that, you've got all of the staff and volunteers and, you know, partners and mums and dads and stuff. You know, like the amount of hot meals that I was offered.
Yeah, really? Oh, yeah, you didn't take them, did you?
Oh, I just took some of them, yeah. You know, it was really nice. And so, you know, talk about that, you know, I talk about that a lot, and I reflect on that time in my life really fondly, because it was such a unique experience. You know, most of my other friends who traveled for a holiday or whatever, and they would travel in groups. So they, you know, they would get the tourist experience, but I felt like I would get a pretty authentic experience wherever I went, purely because I was there to play footy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just think, yeah, I think that's something that's just so unique to our game. It's a global game. You can almost play it in any pocket of the world. And you know, now even the US with MLR, like I see more and more Australian and New Zealand guys going over there and having an awesome time. Like just living in LA playing rugby.
Yeah. Yep. It'd be so good, eh?
Have you had many obviously don't want to get you into trouble, but have you had, you know, many opportunities or any opportunities? I know you're sort of locked down here in Australia, but have you had any opportunities to go and play overseas?
I had a little bit of interest when I was off contract. I don't even know when that was, a couple of years ago, from a team in London, I think it was.
Yep.
But there wasn't a whole lot of interest at that point when I was re-signing. And then I signed for 3 years, so it's obviously been pretty quiet.
Yep.
So I guess we'll see what happens when it comes up. See how I went on my bar last tour.
Mate, that looked like such a fun tour. Like I saw a lot of photos, you know, of guys who were on that tour. It just looked like you had a blast.
Yeah,
you know, obviously there to play footy, but you know, it's a bit of a rite of passage, the footy tour, right?
Yeah, it was nice because we did have to train and perform because it wasn't like a.
Yeah.
It was sort of a rip-off of a Barbar's tour, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're kind of there for backup for the World Cup.
Everyone knew why you were there.
Yeah. So, everyone knew it wasn't the real thing, but we still made the most of it. But we still trained kind of hard, and we just had to keep ourselves in shape. But we also had a lot of fun. And the thing that I enjoyed about it most was that we still played good footy, and it sort of made me realise that maybe you don't have to be, like, dead set so serious to then rock up on a Saturday and play well.
Mm.
So we had a lot of fun during the week, but still sort of just ticked off our training. But obviously it wasn't at the Super Rugby level or anything, like we're kind of cruising. But we still showed up most weekends and performed.
Yep.
Which like I found pleasing, and it sort of opened my mind a little bit to the guys that can just show up on game day and how different people work.
You know,
like some people need a full week of tough training, and then some people, you know, that they're going to cruise through training, but like this guy's going to show up on Saturday.
Yeah. I love playing with those guys.
Yeah, it's so good. It's good doing the contact stuff.
I contact. When I was young, I had an opportunity to do a pre-season with the Brums. So I reckon I was about 22, and there was a bunch of club footy guys there because, you know, the Wallabies guys were on tour. And back then, Jake White was the coach. So we're talking like, you know, 2012, 2013, 2014, somewhere there. And I think the Brumbies had like 16 guys on tour. So it was a real skeleton crew. But one of my first sessions was a contact session. And so Laurie... laughing about it, thinking about it now, but Laurie Fisher sort of blows his whistle and goes, "All right, pair up." And I'm sort of standing on one side, and the C kind of parts, right? And everyone pairs up, and I'm looking around, and then I see, I don't know if you remember Fotu Alua.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be him walking to bail.
Yeah. And he's like, really nice guy. He's like, come over. That's the hard, that is the hardest I've had to train. You know, it was probably a 10-minute block. It felt like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like, he was just, and I don't think he was going that hard, but he was just so, such a strong, athletic.
Yeah, he's a cannonball.
Yeah.
I used to love watching him play.
He was incredible and, you know, struggled a bit with injuries here in Canberra, but he had that one season where he was like the, you know, the impact guy off the bench. He'd come on and just break games open for 20 minutes. It was incredible. But, yeah, that was my introduction to professional rugby. Yeah. Didn't go so well. when you were sort of coming through, who were the guys around who were like the vets? You know, who were your, you know, was there anyone who really took you under their wing and kind of showed you the ropes and helped you make that transition or helped make that transition a bit easier?
Christian Lilifano was the captain at the time. He was always really good to me, to everyone, really.
Yeah.
He's just the man in general. So he was, and being a back, you sort of always spend time with your units. You know, so all our meetings and stuff and our backs training was together. So he really helped me along. Joe Powell was really good for me.
Yep.
We got along really well, still get along really well.
Good guy, Joe.
Yeah, he's a great man.
Yeah.
And Josh Man Ray, Bongo.
Bongo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I remember my first preseason, I was, I think I just finished year 11. And I had to go in because I think it was a similar thing. Maybe the Wallabies guys left and they needed another nine.
Yep.
And I just went in to sort of fill numbers, really.
Yeah.
It was pre-season and I was absolutely shagged. And we had to run MAS in between 15 on 15 and all the nines are running huge meters and I just couldn't do it. So I got sent down the line. So it's sort of like, you know, like the props.
Yeah.
And I was sort of like making my way down. I ended up with Bongo and he was holding, we had to hold hands with someone you're running with.
Yeah.
And he was dead set dragging me along. Only running like 40 meters.
It's a real ego check, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was like, you just come down with the big fellas, mate.
And then I had to drive all the way, I still remember it. I had to drive all the way home after training and was just cooked. Got home, I was just feet up on the couch. Couldn't do anything.
Mate, that's a really strong list of vets. You know, I think Bongo was one of the best. He was such a good footy player. Like, I think he, you know, one of his first years down here, I think he might have won the McDougall Medal, you know, in local club footy. Like, not often a front rower wins that award, but, you know, he was unbelievable. And as you say, Christian Lilifano, like, just one of the best human beings.
Yeah,
I think playing professional footy. Yeah, there's lots of really good human beings, but he's
genuinely cares.
Yeah,
he's a great man.
And you know, I was lucky enough to play a couple of games with him at Tuggeranong, and you know, you wouldn't have faulted him if he'd come in and been like, I'm Christian Lilifano, like, give me the jumper, like, get out of the way, we're doing this, we're doing that. He was so humble. He came in early, spoke to the coaches, because it was like finals time, like, so he was pushing someone who'd played the whole year down into second grade. So, you know, he came in early, spoke to all the coaches, he got around and he sought out the guy that position he was taking, and he spoke to him, and then he would get around to everyone who he didn't know in the team and have a quick yarn with them. And you know, unfortunately we lost that grand final, but you know, he was the guy consoling us,
like,
you know, walking around the change room checking on everyone, making sure we were all good,
and
also, you know, trying to take some of the blame for the loss. You know, he played one game, like, come on, like, but just the gesture was so, like, sincere and heartfelt. Like, it was, yeah, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, he's a great man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot of time for him.
You mentioned Joe Powell, and so, you know, you sort of coming through, and I think he might have been the established nine. Thomas Cubelli might have been there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then Nick White sort of comes in on top of that. So, you know, I sort of look at your career and you've been really patient, you know, I think, and I really commend you for that. And you know, I'm sure you soaked up a lot of knowledge and a lot of stuff from those guys. But, you know, were there times where you were like, you felt like you needed to get away from the Brumbies and just get some game time?
Yeah, there was. When Whitey came back, it sort of felt like that. Sort of felt like Joe and I were like battling pretty well, and then we're learning off each other, and then sort of felt like a bit of a kick in the teeth when Whitey came back. But I think I have learnt so much. Like, I haven't really even noticed how much I've learnt off all the nines that have been here, and just being able to fully understand the program that the Brums are running. And it's just so lucky for me that the program that Brumbies have is just elite, you know. So you really learn how to understand the game and how to work. I think that's probably been the biggest thing that I've learnt, is just how to work, you know. Like, when you're young, you kind of just cruise and then go home.
And don't think about it.
Yeah. Next.
Yeah.
But now I've understood, like, the what you need to be able to perform, and being able to learn off the previous nines is, I think, put me where I am today. But yeah, I kind of like sort of go between the two of maybe my time should have been a couple years ago. But would I have learned all the stuff I've learned now? Maybe not. Would it made me the person I am now? Maybe not. So.
Well, and I'm not sure. I think that's such a mature way to think about that. You know, as you say, you probably have soaked in things you don't even realize.
Yeah.
But, you know, that idea that you were talking about of, you know, learning how to work and learning what you need to do to be prepared, because that's such a unique process. But having exposure to a guy like Whitey when he came back and played a bunch of tests, you know, having exposure to another guy in Thomas Cubelli, who probably had a really different approach coming out of Argentina. You know, you and Joe were probably relatively similar because you were, you know, I think he's only a couple of years older than you, but you both came through that Viking system together. So I think that's a really mature way to look at your time here, because it's obviously starting to pay off, at least. You know, you got that C next to your name now. And you're getting some exposure up into the Australia A program and obviously the Barbars program. So I think there's, you know, there's a lot to be said for sitting and waiting, but at the same time, sometimes you do just need to get those minutes in.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, and it's a real shame we don't have the NRC anymore, because I think that's where, you know, someone like you would have probably accelerated had you had more exposure in there. But, you know, the chasm between, and maybe it's not as big in Sydney or Brisbane, I don't know, because I haven't played up there, but in Canberra, the chasm between club footy and super footy is huge. Even for someone who just watches, you can just see the difference in physicality, the difference in speed, the difference in IQ.
Yeah.
You know, the sets, you know, the lineouts you guys are running at Super Footy is just so different and so much more complex than what's happening at club footy. And, you know, I do worry that young guys make that leap and then kind of get overwhelmed by it all.
Yeah. I think the IQ is the biggest thing that you just touched on, is the, like, everyone's got the ability, but there's so much learning. Like, when I first came in, like, you just don't understand the game, and it takes you so long to understand the game. You know, like, you think you know it, but then there's just so many little elements to the game that you probably don't get exposed to as much as would be ideal growing up and then playing club footy, especially particularly here in Canberra. Like, I'm the same. I'm not sure about the Sydney and Brisbane competitions, but that is one thing that you definitely notice from the guys coming into a professional program for the first couple of years, is just the game understanding, game IQ, and being able to read the game. It takes a long time for that ability to
100%. Yeah. And, you know, some guys never quite get it to the level you want. Was there a Did you have like an aha moment in a game or in a film session or something where you were like, I get this, I understand this, or you know, looking at a defensive line, sort of just knowing how to attack it? Was there a moment or?
Nah, I think it was like I said before, it's from just sort of being here for quite a long time, and then you're just sort of unconsciously picking up on things. You know, like you're always in the meeting space and talking about things, and for the first couple of years, I didn't say boo in any meeting. And then, but I was listening and picking up on things, and then you start to sort of form your own opinion, and you get stuff wrong, and then
everyone does, and then
other people will have different opinions, and then you just all arrive at one path that you want to take. And I think, yeah, that is our biggest work on just young guys, like just that gap.
Yep. Yeah,
because it takes so long to understand.
Yeah. And you know, I can talk about this a little bit, having been a coach at sort of the, you know, within Australia, Rugby Australia's pathway, I guess we'll say, mostly with the women. So you know, we were dealing with some players whose IQ was way up here, you know, as good as any international footballer, and then way down here, you know, relatively new to the sport. Had some athletic gifts and whatever, but you know, just the understanding of the game, you know, even positioning and those kinds of things weren't quite there. But you know, one thing we sort of discovered through this process, and you know, flip flopping between men's and women's programs, is particularly at the school level, and then even to a degree in club rugby, I think it's getting better, but it's so structured. The game plans that are being implemented are so rigid that players often don't get an opportunity to use their brain. They just know the ball goes here, I need to be here, regardless of what they're seeing in front of them. So I used to frustrate the shit out of some of my players.
Yeah, right.
Because I would strip back structure, focus a lot on skill, because you need skill to be able to execute skill. But yeah, I used to frustrate them a lot because I wouldn't give them a lot of, you know, I'd give them moves and stuff that I wanted them to do, but I wouldn't give them direction around when necessarily to use them. I would explain the concepts, you know, when, how and why you would use them, but I wouldn't say do this, this and this and then do that.
Yeah.
I used to frustrate the shit out of the players because they were so used to being told what to do all the time. You know, eventually we got there, but you know, the struggle was the same. You know, we would send a couple of players up to a national team camp or whatever, and the feedback we always got back was, yeah, their IQ's not there. So we really need to, and I think it's part of, you know, Rugby Australia sort of changing. They are changing the way that they're evaluating coaches and educating coaches. So I think that's a key part of it. Because, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe you can speak to it. You know, when you came out of a sort of Vikings program, you know, and straight into the Super Rugby program, is that kind of what you found?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think, yeah, it was different, maybe a little bit different for me, because I didn't spend a whole lot of time playing club footy at like a senior level.
Yep.
So I don't think you can expect IQ to be there coming out of school.
Very true.
So I sort of went in and then, like, I had no idea what was going on. And then, but it was a good way for me to start learning. And I think that's why I understand the game to the level I do now, which still isn't great. But I've got a basic understanding. So, yeah, I'm not sure how you fix it, but I just know that is a
I agree. A big factor. I don't know what the answer is there. You know, I think developing players with a high level of skill helps, because then they should be able to fit into any system. But I think it's what you said earlier. It's about, you know, watching as much footy as you can, you know, doing your homework on opposition, doing your homework on your own stuff, your game, your teammates' game, and really understanding, you know, and this is probably a good question for you, you know, as a halfback, you know, your key, your key skill is your pass. You know, how much work are you doing on your pass? But then also, you know, are you, do you know, when you see a bloke who you're passing to, do you typically know where they like to get the ball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you sort of form a good relationship with the 10 generally, because you have to pass to him quite a lot.
They always want the ball.
Yeah, exactly. As the next bloke coming in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He'll talk shit about my pass the whole time. But yeah, like I find it, there are definitely players that you're like, oh, he's going to be hard to pass to, and he is hard to pass to. There's some guys that I'm not sure what it is. I can't put my finger on why some people are super easy to pass to, why some guys are harder. It's like throwing lineouts. Noss will always say, like, oh, I hate throwing lineouts to this guy. This other guy's really good. Don't know what it is, but yeah, you do have to adjust to some people, and that's the good thing about training, really.
Yeah,
getting used to all the boys.
Yeah, and I'm gonna stroke your ego a little bit. I always really liked playing with you when we didn't play much together, but your speed of pass was excellent. But and, you know, I don't know whether you did this consciously, but you always put the ball just out in front of me. So even when I was at a standing start, you always put the ball just out in front so I could take that first step. That's typically how I liked, you know, to take the step into the ball. So, I don't know how much we played together, maybe 3 or 4 games. Yeah. But, but you know, for me it was a stark difference.
Yeah, okay.
To Joe Powell, you know, played quite a bit of footy with him early in his career. Not much once he became a professional. But you know, he's for whatever reason, I liked your pass better, and I think it was just because of where you placed it for me.
Yeah, it's weird how you form little things. Yeah.
You know, you've obviously played a lot of footy now with Noah.
Yeah.
And he'll probably talk some shit about your pass when he comes in.
Probably.
But, you know, how much time do you guys spend together, you know, on your attack and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, a fair bit. Jack Debrasini is really good for us.
Yep.
His game IQ, what we're talking about before, is best
you've seen.
Ever seen.
Yep.
Yeah. Like it's elite.
Yeah.
And he watches a lot of footy.
Yep.
So it's good sitting down with him and being able to almost like pick his brain of what he's thinking and just like how he sort of analyzes stuff. And then in terms of, what was the question? Noah and I spending time together.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do spend a lot of time. I think we just naturally have to, really. Like going over what we're going to call in terms of plays. Like he's the main caller, but sometimes I'll make suggestions around what I'm thinking at the time. In terms of sort of doing one-on-one stuff like extra training, we don't actually do a whole lot because we train the whole time together. And then we've, like you said before, everyone's got their little things that they work on. So we've got, like I've got my passing and we sort of do a little nines rotation as a little group of nines. Our kicking is completely different to tens.
Yep.
You know, it's all ruck based.
Yep.
And then, yeah, I've just sort of got a goal kicking thing, so... Yeah, we do talk a lot of footy. I probably talk more footy with Jack, to be honest. Yeah, I really like sort of working out what he's thinking.
I really like his game. You know, he's another guy who was exposed super early to super footy, you know, down with the Rebels. And I could never work out, you know, they played him at 10 initially. And then as soon as he started playing well at 10, they moved him to fullback.
Yeah.
I could never really work it out.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was starting to really find his niche as a 10. And it's interesting you say that his IQ's impressive, because I actually think you can see that if you actually watch him closely.
You can
actually see him scanning the defense.
Yeah.
And even the way, you know, his kicking game, and I haven't seen this from a lot of 10s recently, a lot of Australian 10s anyway, you know, the way he scans in behind as well. So he's constantly checking what the pendulum's doing. And if someone's out of position, it's just bang.
Yeah, he slams it.
Yeah.
And he's got a great kick.
Yeah.
Gets us out of so much trouble. Got my little pop gun, and then I'm like, I'll just give it back to Debs.
Can you talk a bit about the box kick? Because I have to explain this to people all the time, the point of the box kick, and I'm sick of doing it. So I'd like to have a box kick aficionado.
Like, what's the theory behind box
kicking? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because I can talk, but then they go, mate, you're a fucking prop. You don't know anything.
That's rude. Yeah. You guys are the smartest in the team.
Yeah, exactly. Exact. Best looking, best dancers.
Well, it's at the Brums, at least, is traditionally been our most efficient way to exit when we get it right, because you can sort of set it up as a bit of a structured kick chase.
Yep.
So you can kick, first of all, if you have to kick off 10, you have to pass sort of 10 metres back. And if you're doing a contestable, you're putting it 25 to 30 metres. So it's sort of 15 to 20 metre gain, and you're hitting them man and ball, maybe get up.
Yep.
Get a contest. In the air.
Yep.
Whereas you can kick from the base of the ruck, so you're getting 20 to 30 metres of territory and potentially a contest in the air with the structured kick chase line.
Yep.
That's if you get it right. It's all dependent on the kick, which sucks.
But I think too now with the new offside law, the box kick is even more deadly, because you can get your line, as you say, you can get your line onside quickly and you can all advance quickly up the field with a structured line. I think, you know, with the, as you're saying, with the pass to the 10, you're doing two things. You're giving the defense a chance to get up in your face. You know, with the box kick, there's less opportunity for them to do that, unless the bloke at the ruck is 7 foot tall and he gets his arms up or whatever, which happens from time to time. But I think and I'll get that. We'll get in the comments. This fucking bloke knows nothing. He's a prop. So, but I think with the way that new law is working, it's a quick and easy way to put that line back together.
Yeah.
Because you can know if you're in an offside position. For those who don't know the new law, if you're in an offside position, you actually have to stop until you put back onside. Now you can't advance until you're up in the until 10 meters, I think it was previously.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's going to become a weapon for lots of teams, obviously, because you shoot that winger up and then try and have the contest, but then you've got your line there sorted. So I think, you know, as the season wears on, I think we'll see more and more teams use it strategically to get that line structured. So I really appreciate that, because
yeah. Well, I don't really enjoy doing them, because they're not great to watch unless you're getting the ball back, and then you can play a little bit unstructured off the back of that. But we've tried to speed up our setup so that we're trying to do the right thing, but we're also trying to win games.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, at a certain point, you're going to go, well, we need to win.
Yeah, like, exactly.
We're going to put bums on seats. Yes, we need to play an attractive style of footy, which I think you guys do. I think, you know, I feel like you guys are playing a much, much more open brand of footy than, you know, actually Dan McKellar played a pretty open brand too, but probably, you know, some of the previous iterations of the Brumbies had tightened up a bit more of the Jack
White. I think we've got a bit more license now to do what we want.
Yeah.
Not what we want, but sort of play more eyes up.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, when you've got a guy, like Noah Alessio, you know, Lenny Kitau, Corey Toole, Andy Muirhead, Tom Wright, like, you know, we can rattle off a bunch of names, but all of those guys are kind of at their best in space. So if you identify space, you know, you just got to get the ball there sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I think, you know, it probably goes back to what we talked about. You know, when you play in that rigid structure, you know, you might look up and see a 4-on-1, but the structure dictates that you go back to the midfield. So, you know, that's sometimes it's tough to coach that out.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's probably tough to play in that as well. When you know, as your IQ progresses, you sort of go, well, I want to go left. I want to go down the short side.
That's what I struggled. Like when I was younger, I was super structured.
Yeah.
And that's kind of all I wanted to do, was like get people in the right place, and I'm still like I still enjoy that, and I still think it works. Like when you have some sort of shape,
totally. You got to have, yeah. You got to have some kind of,
yeah. You got like some sort of home shape,
yep.
To then be able to recognize what you've got in front of you, and then you sort of know where all your boys are.
Yep.
But yeah, I used to be like, you got to be here, you got to be here, and I was trying to run it all, and then yeah, over the last couple of years, you kind of learn that a little bit of randomness is good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's, you know, from a fan's perspective, it's entertaining because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, we love to see, yeah, hear the old rugby supporters all the time talk about it, you know, romanticize it. You know, we used to play such good footy, it was open and this and that. But if you really look, it's that. The game in 1996 and the game in 2023 are not the same game.
No. The defense was.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I don't want to talk shit on that because obviously it was when the Super Rugby was kicking off, but it is completely different.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I watched the 99 World Cup final a couple of weeks ago. It was just maybe it was on Stan, or it was on the TV anyway, or it was, you know, something there that I could watch. And I watched it. And I was like, this, it doesn't even resemble.
Nah.
I mean, it does. But, you know, there's some of the stuff around the ruck, the scrums, like the defense, you know, it's very different, very different game to the one we play today.
I sometimes think, what's it going to be like in another 20?
But, you know, and the other thing too, like I look at the body shapes on the field too. You know, guys are bigger, more athletic, stronger. You know, especially front rowers. Like, you don't see too many front rowers with a big gut anymore. You know, they're all broad-shouldered and sort of big, triangular-shaped guys. Like, they're just big, muscly guys. Yeah. You look at 99, you know, there were still some, you know, lots of slight, really lean guys running around. Mm. You just don't see that much anymore.
Nah.
You know, there's not too many guys running around under 100 kilos these days.
Yeah.
Oh dear, mate. I'm conscious it's your day off, and you know, you've probably got better things to do than sit here and talk to
me. Doing some sheet work. Stuff
today, oh, good stuff. Yeah. So I want to end on this one question, and I've asked a couple of guys this question. What is it about the game that you love? What is the one thing that kind of brings you back, makes you keep wanting to play, you know, keeps you hungry to you know, invest so much time in this sport?
I think it's like being around people that are all striving for the same thing. I take it for granted still, but being able to rock up at work and you can just train as hard as you can and blow up at someone, like... hit someone as hard as you can, and then at the end of the day, you're still good mates.
100%.
Yeah, that's what I love about it. And like having all those friendships through there, and you go through so many tough times, tough training sessions, that you just become so close. Mm. Not that I have experience in any other workforce, but I just feel like that's something special and unique to playing professional sport.
I completely agree. I've been really lucky in my professional career that I've had a couple of organizations that I've worked for where we've had that singular focus on an outcome or a goal or whatever. And it really, as you say, it really does bond you in a pretty special way. And, you know, I can say that it's two organizations in particular. I still, those sort of 10 people that I worked with, I still consider them some of my best friends. You know, they're all doing other stuff now, and you know, I romanticize that time, you know, in my brain. But that idea of a singular focus towards a goal, and you know, in professional sport, it's really a pursuit of getting better, right?
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
And certainly that level of accountability that you're talking about, where you can chip one of your teammates, or you can, you know, get after them in training, hit them hard because that's what they need, or that's what you need, and you both kind of understand that that's in pursuit of getting better. Mm. I think that's really special, and I think that's really unique.
Yeah.
This was fun.
Yeah, it's good. Thanks. It was my first podcast ever.
Wow.
Yeah. That hope I went all right.
Mate, you killed it. And yeah, I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you, mate.
That's it for this week of the Given Rugby podcast. I'd like to thank everyone for listening or watching. Please don't forget to like us on social media. We're at Given Rugby. We'd also really appreciate a subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts from. If you really like the show, we'd love a review because that helps permeate the podcast across all of the platforms and will show the podcast to others who like rugby. Finally, don't forget to join the Given Rugby Club, where we're going to be giving away exclusive content, early episodes, access to guests, access to me. So please don't forget to head over to givenrugby.com and sign up for the Given Rugby Club, which is just $5 a month. Finally, thank you to our sponsors, and we look forward to the next episode next week.